I was locked in the feeling that I'd failed her.
Yes, I know the other parents felt the same way. You know, you raise your child and you spend 18 years demonstrating what you want them to be by your example and by what you support and what you tell them to ignore. And I felt like I had not presented an effective view of the world to my daughter, that she felt like this kind of radical departure from what I expected was preferable. This danger was preferable to what I wanted for her. At the end of the day, though, I think it is a great lesson for me in loving the daughter that you have rather than the daughter that you thought you wanted to create when you first had that baby. You don't get that much control, so you have to learn to love what you have.
We're joining us now is Maureen Blaha, Executive Director of the National Runaway Switchboard, a communication system for homeless youth. She's with us from her office in Chicago, and it's nice to have you with us today. Hello, Maureen Blaha, are you there? Hello, can you hear us? All right, we'll try to get back with her in just a moment. In the meantime, let's see if we can get another call on the line. We'll go to Forrest, and Forrest is another caller from Charlotte.
Yes, hello. My name is Forrest, and I live here in Charlotte. My daughter is living this lifestyle, and it's totally her decision. She didn't need to go. We worry about her immensely. We didn't have any idea that these kids were doing this around the country. And when I initially heard that she was hopping trains and learning to cook birds over a tin can, I was just, it was completely devastated. But and now after hearing some people in your show and realizing that these are choices that these kids are making, and this doctor from Charlotte, it's really opening my eyes. My comment is my family is always, she'll call me from time to time, and very seldom will she ask for any money. And the first thing as a parent I want to do is, of course, send her money. She'll ask for $15, and I'll send her $50. But, of course, with no checking account, it has to be done through the Walmarts and Western Unions of the world. Well, my entire family is telling me to stop this practice, that I'm only helping her live this lifestyle. So not too long ago, shortly after Christmas, we decided to kind of put the stop to the funding, and I was always concerned about her not calling, but the calls still come, and she's as happy as she's ever been and completely understands that I don't want to send her money, and it's very puzzling as a parent, but and very concerning, but it's tough to deal with, but it's something that you do have to live with.
Forrest, I don't envy you trying to get to sleep at night.
I shall try to do so.
Okay.
Forrest, from my point of view, I think send them money, because there is nothing that you can do that will persuade them to do one thing or another. They will make this decision on their own. I think every parent who I spoke with recognized that the only power they had was the power of expressing their love to their child, and that love would bring them back. Some parents were like, I'm going to be strict, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to set higher rules and higher standards. Other parents were like, I am going to open my heart to you and approve of whatever you do. And neither approach has any effect. So $50 is $50. She's going to eat that night. Maybe she'll stay in a hotel. Maybe her friends will all eat, you know?
That's exactly it. And she is a musician. She could, and there's no need for her to be anywhere but home. But and every time I speak with her, it's just this unbelievable happiness and
joy.
And it's tough to understand as a parent, but it's nice to know that it's not something that I did wrong or that her mother did wrong. It's just her lifestyle that she's chosen.
It's the Woody Guthrie phrase, the devil was scratching her heel.
She actually plays that song.
Oh, no.
Forrest, thanks very much for the call. We wish your daughter the best of luck.
Thanks for having me.
And Maureen Blaha is back with us from the National Runaway Switchboard and with us from her office in Chicago. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And we're talking about people who are self-resilient, who've made choices, who are living a kind of lifestyle. Nevertheless, a lot of people who run away from home and become transients are very vulnerable people.
Absolutely. Yeah. What happens when kids run from home, and especially if they end up on the streets, is that initially they are very vulnerable to become for criminals to pick out and vulnerable to crime. And then after a while, just for a means of survival, they often become perpetrators of crime. You know, they'll do anything for a warm bed, a hot meal, from panhandling to selling drugs to selling their bodies. So it's a very scary situation for kids to be alone and on the street.
Not everyone finds the kind of friends and support groups that that the kids we're talking about did. And it is important to remember that parents, too, have resources, and I know you try to help.
Yes, we do. About the National Runaway Switchboard has both an hotline at 1-800-RUNAWAY. We also have great online services at www.1800RUNAWAY. And when we handle calls, last year we handled over 100,000 calls. About half of them are from adults, and that would be parents whose child has gone missing or parents who might say she was adorable at 12 and now she's 15 and we can't communicate. And we are there to listen to anyone who calls, either a child or a parent or someone else concerned about a child, to help focus on really what is the main issue and to help come up with a plan of action so that the caller at the end of the call has somewhere to turn.
Now, most of the kids in this fire, I think all of them, in fact, were over 18. That changes things, doesn't it?
It does a bit, except at the National Runaway Switchboard, we are here to support kids, and we define them even into adolescence and up to age 24, because a lot of youth are not really able to be on their own, even though most states have 18 as the age of majority. A lot of them are still struggling, you know, depending on perhaps what their family background was, depending on their education and job situation. And so we are here to support those that are even over 18 and for parents of children that are in risky and vulnerable situations.
Maureen Blaha, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Maureen Blaha, Executive Director of the National Runaway Switchboard. And we have to emphasize again, Donnell Morton, this is not the situation your daughter was in. It's not the situation Katie Seminer was in, but it is the situation some kids do find themselves in.
Well, they're not the population, I agree with you, but there's not the population that I was involved with. They were mostly 18 and had tried a number of ways to connect with the world, and it hadn't worked. You know, my daughter was in her second semester of their freshman year of college when she said, "I'm out of here." And there are a lot of young people who have that same experience. They're in college, or they're mm-hmm. in a job like a Pizza Hut, and it just seems like they can't make it in the world. And every time they come home, people are scowling at them, and so the urge to shake off the scowls with this kind of blind act of daring is something that appeals to them.
Here's an email we have from Justin in Boise. As a former member of the transient community in the Northwest and a current member of the corporate real world, I often struggle with which of these worlds is really more productive to real human happiness. The ability to keep yourself alive and to enjoy every moment of it seems invaluable. Thanks so much for this conversation today. Let's go next to Topher, and Topher's on the line with us from Des Moines.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, Topher, how are you?
I'm doing great. I wanted to say, first of all, that I feel bad about what happened in the fire, and that we all feel bad about what happened, and we all feel the loss.
We all? So you're part of this transient community?
I am. I have been for a few years.
And you're calling from Des Moines, but I gather...
No, I'm actually calling from California.
you're originally from Des Moines.
Yes.
Okay, and have you been through New Orleans?
I have actually avoided New Orleans. I don't drink.
Topher, that's a very perceptive decision on your part.
And
it was a personal decision, much like
that. Right.
And where are you staying right now?
I'm actually at a friend's house. I have many friends. I've made connections all across the country in that way.
And you obviously have a phone, so you stay in touch with your friends that way, too?
Actually, I'm borrowing their phone. I don't like phones.
I don't like phones, and you don't like drinking.
I do listen to NPR, though, every day.
Well, thank you for that. And as you, this is your choice. Is it something you plan to do for how much longer?
Until I feel that I'm ready. I'm actually saving up right now so that I can leave the country and travel the world for a while.
And travel the world for a while. So where would you start if you had the choice?
Probably Nepal or Tibet.
Good luck.
I'm not entirely sure.
Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're talking with Danelle Morton, a freelance journalist, author of A World on Fire, Life and Death in a New Orleans Squat. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ron's on the line. Ron calling with us from Salyan, Michigan.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Yes. I left home when I was 15 from Michigan and moved to Los Angeles. I lived there for about a year. And I think that from the age of about 14 until 18 or 19, most people don't have any idea what something like that does to their families. It's so destructive. And it's actually only, I have a son that's 15 now, and that's certainly put a lot of what I've done in my past into perspective. So I think that a lot of what happens when you're younger, that appears a great adventure can be, if you go with it, can cause people a great amount of pain. And you need to be careful that young people understand when indeed that happens.
Danelle Morton?
I agree with you that it caused the families of those who left a lot of anxiety, many sleepless nights. But I think that, as you probably remember from being 15, that's like a lot lower down the list of priorities at that point. The fact that, okay, most of the kids that I know of, their parents pay for their cell phones and have insurance on them so that they can stay in touch. And so that what makes this different than, let's say, the kids who are hopping the rails in the Great Depression. There's still that way to stay in touch with your parents. And I think in that way, a lot of the kids that I met felt like, well, you know, I'm still in touch with my mom and dad, so, you know, they don't have to worry.
Well, they're going to worry anyway, aren't they?
Well, they're going to worry if they're going to college.
That's true. Well, Ron, thanks very much.
Okay, can I want to make another comment?
If you make it very quick.
Just an answer, sure. I actually got a job and got an apartment and lived, very, very comfortably when I was in Los Angeles at 15. So, but it was still, yes, I think that what I'm saying is that it's important to let kids know, because every kid talks about running away, that what that actually means.
All right. Well, again, there's a distinction. I think this email will help us out. And Ron, thanks very much. Jess in Oregon writes, I have been part of this culture. I disagree with your use of the word runaway. Dropout might be more accurate. Most of the people who are part of this legitimate, structured subculture are not teenagers running away from their parents, but legal adults choosing to leave mainstream society and have a different lifestyle. There are many grosser, uncomfortable parts of the alternative traveler, squatter lifestyle, but it is a free choice, one that makes sense to many people and is extremely valuable in learning to make choices and decisions and decide what is most important, not just what society says, what your values should be. We also want to read this email from Elaine in Huron, South Dakota. On your story on runaways, Katie Siminer was my niece and goddaughter. She was as far from being a runaway as some may think. I would describe her as a free spirit, a joyful soul, a delight to be around, quick with a smile or a helping hand, and a contagious laugh that would touch your heart. She was a very talented artist and welder by trade, used both of those abilities to help others at a Denver art program that served the underprivileged youth and repair bicycles for the homeless in NOLA. She was an extraordinary person and an unlikely circumstance. We will forever be grateful for her in our lives, and we miss her dearly. And Danelle Morton, I have to ask quickly, what's your daughter doing today?
She just started a job on Monday, and she's getting a driver's license, I hope, on the next Monday from there. So I think that she's kind of making a new way in the world.
Danelle, thanks very much for your time today. Interesting piece.
Thank you.
Danelle Morton joined us from member station KQED. Again, you can find your link to a piece for the Boston Review at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. When we come back, Turkey as the new normal in the emerging Middle East. Jackson Deal will join us from the Washington Post. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.